rush time at the end. If that works for everybody.
Okay, great. So Q&A at the end.
If we can, then.
I'd also like to acknowledge that I see that a lot of people are sending chat messages. Richard and I probably are not focused on the chat messages, right? We're focused on sharing. So if you do send us a message, we may not see it. That's probably not the best way to get a hold of us during the session. So I just wanted people to be aware that we can't respond to things that are popping up in the chat necessarily.
Yeah. And further to that, we have asked the admins that chat stay enabled so that you can direct message each other. And the reason for that is that we're going to ask, we have a couple of requests of you. One of those, as I said in the previous session, is that if you can have your camera on, please do. It really helps us to feel like we're having a conversation with people instead of black squares on the screen. And the other is, we want to know who in this room, if you're coming to a meeting on how to sponsor, it sounds as if you might have some interest in being a sponsor. If you are available to sponsor, we would invite you to rename yourself and put a plus sign after your name, the way that you see on my name here. Those people who are in this session because they heard there was potential sponsors here should maybe look around the room for those plus signs, and we may have found someone for you to talk to. And you should feel free to direct message each other throughout this session in order to exchange contact information and have a larger discussion later. So again, for the people that just joined us, my name is Richard. I'm a grateful and enthusiastic member of CODA. I'm codependent as hell. My home group is the Experience, Strength, and Hope group of Codependents Anonymous in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada. And I've been hanging out with these people since the Monday after Mother's Day 2003.
And I'm Ian. I'm from the same group. I've been hanging out here since the Father's Day, right after the Mother's Day Richard is referring to. We belong to the Experience, Strength, and Hope group, Codependents Anonymous in Saskatoon. Tiny little group that was five people when I got there, and Richard was one of them. Now we have three meetings a week, and they're all on Zoom, so you're all invited to find us through CODA Canada, and you can find links to our meetings there. Richard, did you want to start with the set-aside prayer, since we talked about doing that?
I love to start with set-aside prayer, if you all indulge me. Higher power, please help me today to set aside the things I think I know. Help me to set aside everything I think I know about you, everything I think I know about myself, everything I think I know about other people, and everything that I think I know about this program. All so that I can have a new experience in you, a new experience in myself, a new experience in these, my fellows, and a new experience in my own recovery. Thanks for listening. I love that prayer because it speaks directly to the nature of my illness. So we want to talk about some more about sponsorship. We just did a session where we were talking to primarily to potential sponsees, people looking for a sponsor on how to look for a sponsor, how to be a good sponsee. Here we want to talk about the other end of that equation, and what it might look like to get into and be effective at sponsoring somebody in their CODA recovery. We really kind of need to preface by saying that no matter what it is that Ian and I have to say, your mileage may vary. Every sponsorship relationship is a unique relationship between two unique people. And how you sponsor is almost certainly going to be different from how I sponsor, and that's going to be different from how Ian sponsors. Nobody can sponsor everybody. That's why there's more than one of us. If any two of us were identical, at least one of us would be unnecessary. So with that said, what we can talk about is some principles that have worked for us and some experiences that we've had that may be useful to you. So understand that if we talk about what we're doing and it's different from what you're doing, that is not a criticism of what you're doing. It's just, we're talking about what we're doing. I said in the previous session, and I'll restate it here, that sponsorship is the catalyst of recovery in my experience, that my recovery really took off once I got a sponsor. And, you know, I worked through the steps and I had some experiences. And then somebody came and asked me to be a sponsor. And then somebody else asked me to sponsor them. And somebody else asked me to sponsor them. And what happened was that my recovery accelerated again to a level that I didn't know was available to me. That's been my experience. That we talk here about doing the work. When we talk about doing the work, we're talking about working the steps. What I figured out for me anyway is that the first 11 steps are not the work. The first 11 steps are the things that I need to do to equip myself to do the work, which is the 12th step, which is carrying the message, which is being of service to another codependent who still suffers. And that what I get out of that is beyond anything that I ever dreamed was available to me. Ian, you want to add anything to that?
Yeah. In my recovery, I'd gotten to a certain point where I felt like I had plateaued, where I wasn't growing nearly as fast as I had previously. I was just feeling kind of blah about how it was going. And it was Richard who said to me, I think it's time for you to start sponsoring. And he shared with me his experience of how his recovery took off yet again when he started sponsoring other people. And I think for me, my sponsor did me a huge service by being my sponsor. He gave me a gift that is unimaginable, to be honest. And when I talked to him about how do I ever pay you back for all that you've done for me, like, keep in mind, when my wife asked me to leave the house, the first person I phoned was my sponsor. And I went and met him and I cried for like 3 hours. And he said, what are you going to do now? And I said, I haven't a clue. And he said, well, why don't you come and stay with me and we'll figure this out together, at least for the next little while. Right. That's how much my sponsor did for me. And you don't have to do that for all your sponsees, but that's what my sponsor did for me. And when I asked him, how can I ever pay you back? He said, you can't pay me back, but I'm giving to you something that was given to me. So when your time comes, you're going to pay it forward by doing this for somebody else. And that's how you're going to pay me back, by paying it forward. So that's something I take really seriously. Our program, our recovery, what we've inherited from those who came before us needs to be passed on to those who are coming along. And it's just so important for us to sponsor and to pass on that experience, strength, and hope that has helped us so much to others. Richard?
I have nothing to add to that. So let's get into it. Let's start with what is sponsorship. And for those that were in the past session, this next couple of minutes may sound repetitive because we're going back to the same source and just looking at it from a slightly different perspective. We have a really good booklet in CODA called Sponsorship, What's in It for Me? And Ian has something there that he'd like to share with you.
Sure. This is from page 2 in my edition. I'm old. I've been in program for a while, so I have an earlier edition than some people might have. But this reads, sponsoring relationships in CODA are really three-way partnerships comprised of sponsees, sponsors, and a higher power. Through listening to other people sharing, potential sponsees notice that some people have sponsors who help guide them through the 12-step process. Often, sponsors demonstrate a positive approach to life, no matter what the circumstances. Many of us yearn for that quality of acceptance and inner peace. We realize that the program suggestion of having a sponsor as a guide through the CODA 12 steps and traditions makes sense. We decide to look for a sponsor, but we don't know where to start.
For me, like looking at that from that other perspective, this three-way a partnership between the sponsor, the sponsee, and a loving higher power. In sponsorship, I get to experience the feeling of being a conduit, because it's not about me showing this guy how to do it right. It's about me being a conduit for a message that he needs to hear. And oftentimes the stuff that I will share with a sponsee is not something I would have ever said on my own. But, you know, one of the things that I do is when I take a call from a sponsee, don't tell any of my sponsees this, but I don't listen for the first 30 seconds. They never say anything important in the first 30 seconds anyway. They're usually staging, you know, they're prepping their explanation. So you need to be very careful when you listen to this. And this is, I understand that I was tired when I did this, you know, that kind of stuff. So I don't listen for that first 30 seconds. Instead, I pray. I ask my higher power to help me to find words that are going to be useful to this man. And I watch words come out of my mouth that I didn't know were there, that I couldn't have imagined saying until they showed up. That idea of being a conduit for something more important than me is almost indescribable, but there's a satisfaction there that I never knew before I got here.
Yeah. I just want to jump in and say that there's so often I've had a conversation with a sponsee and I think, oh, that really didn't go well, or maybe it went really well. And a week later, I'm talking to the same sponsee and he said, you know, when you said this, blah, 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 that was so meaningful to me. And I can't remember those words at all. I could have sworn I never said that. But the sponsee is hearing what they're supposed to hear. And as Richard said, my job in the relationship is to let my higher power say what he's going to say and be a conduit for that, but try and stay out of the way. It's not about my ego. It's not about my opinion. It's about me being there to hear them and me sharing my experience, strength, and hope, and hoping that my higher power is going to say something to them that they need to hear. And it's not my job to guess what it is. Back to you.
Yeah, I've more than once had the experience of sitting in a meeting and listening to a sponsee sharing, saying, this is the problem that happened to me, and I called my sponsor, and this is what he told me. And whatever it is that they said, I said, I don't remember saying. And the only conclusion that I can come to is that wasn't me saying it. It was my higher power saying it, and my participation was only peripherally required. So, what is sponsorship? It's that partnership that is dedicated on two people's recovery. You know, it's the sponsor has a job, and that is to try to help the sponsee make progress through this thing we call recovery. That starts with the steps and the traditions. What we share with a sponsee is our experience, strength, and hope. What I will tell sponsees is that, yeah, I want to talk about the ongoing problems in their life, but only so that I can share my experience, strength, and hope on how I may have applied the steps, the traditions, the tools of the program to a similar situation in my life and how that worked out. Call that either experience, strength, and hope or experience, strength, and scar tissue, but it works the same either way. And that is ultimately the job of the sponsor. We sometimes get concerned that there's other responsibilities there for a sponsor. And that's what I think scares a lot of people off from being sponsors. So what we want to do in this session today is to really simplify it. You know, we have that slogan, keep it simple. What is the actual requirements to become and act as a sponsor? Ian?
For me, I want to be working my program and be at least ahead of the person who's asking me to sponsor them, right? If maybe I haven't been in program long enough to have done all the 12 steps, but I want to at least be far enough along that I have experienced strength and hope to share with the newcomer who's asking. So I certainly have worked the 12 steps several times now, but at the time when I was thinking about getting into this, I wasn't at step 12 when people started to ask me, but I was further ahead than they were. So I was encouraged to go ahead and think about sponsoring them. The other thing I find really important for me is my job is only to share my experience, strength, and hope, right? What I have learned from this program, it's not about me sharing my opinion. I try really hard to avoid that. And that allows me the freedom to tell somebody, yes, I can help you with that because I have experience, strength, and hope there. Also think it's important for somebody who's sponsoring to know a little bit about boundaries and how to set them, because my sponsor, when I first asked him, set some boundaries with me, which were really good. So he kind of had some rules around sponsoring. So if you're going to sponsor some people, you might want to think about what boundaries you want to set and how you want to express those to your sponsee. And those are there to look after you. My sponsor said, your job, Ian, is to pick up the phone and call me. I don't want you thinking twice about that. In fact, I believe in this so much that I don't care if it's 2 o'clock in the morning. You pick up the phone and call me if that's what you need to do. And then he said his job was to let me know whether or not it was a good time for him to take the call. And if it wasn't a good time, he would tell me when he could return my call, right? So that he wasn't just leaving me hanging. So he really insisted that I call him regardless of where I was at. Now, I set similar boundaries with my new sponsees, but there are times in my life where I really can't afford to have them calling me in the middle of the night, in which case I tell them, text me. I can't take a call in the middle of the night tonight, but text me and I'll get back to you as soon as I can, right? So you need to think about those boundaries. Also thinking about how often you want people to call you, how you want this relationship to look and work. Richard, I'm going to throw it back to you.
Yeah, that is one of the really important things that happened for me as a sponsor. It taught me boundaries. Right? Because if I don't develop boundaries as a sponsor, if only out of self-defense, then essentially I'm turning my will and my life over to the sickest person in the room, which in this case is that sponsee. I'm leaving my entire life available to his schedule. And let me assure you that those kinds of sponsees never have a crisis at 7 o'clock in the evening. It's usually 1:30 in the morning. Other reasons that gets us into why it's so important to be a sponsor. And we talked a little bit about that idea of paying it back by paying it forward. But there's a couple of other things that happen automatically for us as sponsors. One is that if I'm sponsoring new people, I am always working the steps. I am always immersed in the steps because I'm walking through them with that guy. I alluded to it before, but often what happens for me is that a sponsee will call me and they've got a problem and I will share something with them. And I will watch the words come out of my mouth that I needed to hear because of something going on in my life. I gain insights into me that I would not have had if I didn't get to look at it through the lens of that guy's problem. What else is it? Oh, another reason that it's really important to be a sponsor, kind of generically, is that code is important to us. And without effective sponsorship, this fellowship dies. I don't know about you, but I don't want that to happen. So I want to participate in and encourage sponsorship because I want this fellowship to continue to be here as long as I need it, which is at least for the foreseeable future. Because I'm still codependent as hell. Ian?
I have to say that for me, like there's, there is a growth that comes out of doing sponsorship. That's not just even about, yeah, I learn more about the steps. I learn more about the traditions. I see them from somebody else's point of view and realize how they can be applied in their specific situation. But I think you said it before, like in my gut, I know that my disease is a spiritual disease. And by being a sponsor, I'm really applying that idea of a relationship between me, the sponsee, and a higher power. It does a lot of healing in my life. It teaches me about what healthy relationships look like. It gives me an opportunity to practice boundaries and to talk about boundaries. It helps me understand what's my business and what's not my business. There's just so much of me working my program just in the very act of sponsorship that I can't help but grow in my recovery by doing. I think that was what I wanted to add.
It gives me concrete experience in applying this program in my life in a more nuanced, more layered, in a deeper way. And consequently, I become better at doing the things that keep my life going well. So, hopefully we've convinced you at least a little bit that the idea of participating as a sponsor, has some attraction. So how do you know when you're ready? That's one of the questions that we get asked a lot is, how will I know when I'm ready to be a sponsor? And just like, when should you find a sponsor? There was a glib answer to that. There's a glib answer to this one. How do you know they're ready? When someone asks you. Did you take the third step? Did you make a commitment to try to turn your will and your life one day at a time over to a loving higher power? If that's the case, then it's my conviction that when a loving higher power decides that you're ready to be sponsored, he will send someone across the room to ask you. And if I've taken the third step, then, and someone has asked me, I need to consider that a message from my higher power, when I decide how I'm going to answer. You know, our literature talks about other factors. The old sponsorship booklet talked about the fifth step as kind of the threshold level for becoming a sponsor in CODA. But you know, Ian talked about it earlier, that ultimately all that's really required is that you have more recovery than the sponsee. I do that fifth step thing. When I take a sponsee through the fifth step, we have a little chat afterward. We're talking about, you know, you've now met the minimum requirements to become a sponsor in CODA. And I ask them a question. Could you take a newcomer and walk them through the first three steps the way that I walked you through them? And they invariably say yes. So then I tell them, well, all you've got to do is stay one step ahead of the sponsee and you're golden. But we have insecurities around that idea of becoming sponsors. It has a tendency for some of us to tweak our illness. You want to talk about that, Ian?
Sure. As a codependent, I have a lot of fear. My whole approach to relationship is based on fear, right? And I'm a recovering codependent. I'm not a recovered codependent. So that fear is still there behind me. So for me, certainly I was petrified the first time somebody asked me to sponsor them. And I had to talk to my sponsor. Something I would recommend is you don't consider sponsoring other people unless you've got a sponsor yourself. Somebody to help you through the process and through those fears that can help you when you get asked a question that you don't know how to answer. My fears included things like, what if I tell them the wrong thing? What if I make their life worse? What if they reject me? And one of my biggest fears was, what if they're suicidal and they commit suicide? Would I be able to handle that? Or would I feel somehow responsible? I mean, that one really stopped me in my tracks, because in our group, we'd run into a few people who were suicidal, right? And it crossed my mind heavily. So it's really good to have a sponsor so you can talk to them about those kinds of things. I'm just trying to, sorry, I just got distracted by a call that came in from my doctor. I'm not going to answer it.
I'll pick up there. That idea I talked about before, but how do you know when you're ready when they ask you? I was taught that, Richard, you know, if you look like a good idea to them, you can't hurt them. Right? If they're sick enough that my recovery is attractive to them, then there's really nothing I can do to make things materially worse. All I've got to do is limit myself to sharing the stuff that's got me this far. And if I do that, I'm on safe ground. And that is the thing that I think is most freeing for potential sponsors, is to remember that all I've got to do is focus on what I've done. I'm pretty comfortable with that. And if it's outside of what I've done, then I can refer them elsewhere. Or just confess that I have no experience with that.
There's a lot of safety there was a lot of safety for me when it was reinforced to me that all I'm sharing is my experience, strength, and hope. And who else is an expert in that but me? So that's all that's required of me. I don't have to be knowledgeable about anything else, right? I can just rely on my experience, strength, and hope and share that. And that means it should be safe for me to sponsor just about anybody.
So if we've decided that we're going to make ourselves available for sponsorship, how do we go about that? Because, you know, Ian shared earlier about that person who came up to him at an early meeting and said, "Hey, I'm going to be your temporary sponsor." And that in our circles is really off-putting. It's a behavior that we discourage because, even if it's not intended that way, it can be seen as really controlling. So what do we do to make ourselves available as sponsors? Well, there's a bunch of things that we can do. A lot of meetings will have some kind of designation on their phone list. And we encourage people to do that. In our group, you put an asterisk behind your name if you're willing to be a temporary sponsor. And so when one of my guys goes through the fifth step, I encourage them to start putting an asterisk beside their name. And they're making themselves available for sponsorship. I talked earlier about sponsorship registries through COTA, the COTA Service Conference, and also through COTA Canada. But a big one is going to the meetings and just being available to the newcomer. I tell those guys who've been through the fifth step that from here on in, if I want to talk to the newcomer after the meeting, I would really love to have to elbow you aside in order to do that. Because that is, in my experience, the best way to make myself available for sponsorship is to show interest in the newcomer. To sit with them at coffee and find out a little bit about them, share with them a little bit about my recovery, and leave it in their hands. Ian?
Yeah, I was just going to say, going to coffee after the meeting, that thing we used to do before COVID, back in the old days, was probably where more people would ask about, would ask you whether you were open to sponsorship or not than anywhere else. Right, because it was that opportunity to talk outside of the meeting about whatever's going on. They get to see and hear you in a different context, in a social context. And I think, to be honest, they're trying to find out whether you're walking the talk. You know, it's easy to talk about recovery when you're in the meeting. How are you when you're outside of the meeting? Are you living? You know, are you walking the talk? And when you're at coffee with people, they start asking you questions and they get to be more comfortable, maybe a little more trusting, a little more willing to take a risk and ask you. So certainly that happened a lot. For me, I think in CODA, the first time I let people know I was ready to sponsor we used to have an opportunity to do a long share. We'd have speaker meetings and I'd volunteered to do a speaker meeting. And then at the end of the speaker meeting, I said, this is where I'm at in my program. This is where I'm at in my recovery. And I think I'm ready now to start sponsoring. So if anybody's looking for a sponsor and if what I shared sounds like it would be of use to you, let me know after the meeting. And I had one guy come up to me and ask me to sponsor him right after the meeting, you know. So, that's about what I wanted to add there, Richard.
Okay. So now we come back to the question that we asked the previous session. What are the attributes of an effective sponsor? In this case, I mean, it's still that page 8 and 9 out of sponsorship, what's in it for me. But this is now from the perspective of, am I practicing that? And here's the thing. Much like the promises, these become something that I can use aspirationally in my own recovery. Reminders of how I want to be. And they become powerful tools in support of my own recovery. You want to run through those again, Ian, for the people that just joined us?
Sure. I'll emphasize them maybe a little bit differently, but again, they're out of the sponsorship, what's in it for me. And there's a table in there on page 8 and 9 in my version. So characteristics of a CODA sponsor. I place recovery first. I commit in word and action to my own recovery. I have more recovery than they have. I actively work the 12 steps. I know the CODA 12 traditions and I can apply them in my life. I'm ready to guide others through the 12 steps and 12 traditions. And maybe I share that way at meetings. I exhibit a recovery program that others see as attractive. I'm going to skip a few of these. The same gender, I certainly don't sponsor anybody who's not the same gender as me. I don't sponsor anybody who's sexually attracted to me. But I maintain personal boundaries in a non-aggressive manner. And I'm emotionally present. I keep an open mind. I am willing to accept myself and other people where they're at. I see others as equal and I treat others as equal. I learn to listen actively without interrupting people. I share my own thoughts and my feelings. I respect our right for confidentiality at the meeting. I listen with compassion and understanding without rescuing or giving advice to others. I help identify codependent behavior in supportive and non-shaming ways. I let other people know if I am working more than one program. And I will tell people that because I do work another program. I respect and accept whatever pace others are at in their recovery. I provide loving support for others and for myself, and I encourage others to do the same. I try to communicate clearly and directly, and I ask questions for clarity, not to control or judge or manipulate others, but to help bring clarity. I use my own sponsorship relationship to grow myself, both spiritually, mentally, and emotionally. You know, I try to walk the talk and I try to have a sense of humor. I try to not take myself too seriously. I try to not take my knowledge too seriously. And I try to have some fun in life. So it's not just all being serious. So those are some of the characteristics that tell me I'm ready to help others through sponsorship.
I firmly believe that if I've been doing this recovery thing for any length of time and I'm not having fun, I'm doing it wrong. So, let's say that you've been doing your best to practice what we just heard, to be that kind of person, to walk the talk. And someone just came and asked you to be their sponsor. What do you do? Well, if you're like most of us and it's the first time, you panic. So can I suggest that the very next thing you do is call that person that you keep on speed dial your sponsor. and talk it out with them. In my case, when my sponsor talked me down off the ledge, then things became a little clearer and a little easier. For those of you that are already sponsors, think about this for a second. Do you have a set of requirements for the people that you sponsor? It's not a universally popular position to take in CODA, but I certainly do. I mentioned before that the bulk of my recovery efforts are spent in the 12th step these days, and the quality of my recovery depends on the guys that I work with. I want to work with guys that want to do this thing. And so what I like to do when somebody asks me to be their sponsor is say, I'd be honored, but first we're going to have a little chat. We're going to go for coffee and we're going to talk about what that relationship looks like for both of us and give you a chance to back out if you want to. And what I will tell them is the things that I see as really important, to our relationship and to me having a chance to be able to help this guy. And it's things like, have a home group. I sponsor CODA members. CODA members go to CODA meetings. And it's important to have a home group. I want the sponsee to call me when something's going on in their life. As we talked about before, it's important to have boundaries around that, but it's their job to make the call. It's my job to have the boundaries if it's not a good time. And so what I tell sponsees is that if you've had the thought, maybe I should talk to Richard about this, stop thinking and just pick up the phone. After that, the process takes over. I ask the guys that I sponsor to respect the purpose of the meetings, which means that according to the fifth tradition, the primary purpose of our groups is to carry a message of hope to the codependent who still suffers. It means to me that the newcomer is the most important person at the meeting, and every word that comes out of my mouth in a meeting, I need to consider from the perspective of, will this be helpful to the newcomer? The meetings are not about my problem du jour. I don't take my meetings my problems to a meeting. I take my problems to my sponsor. That's what he's there for. And so I tell my sponsees that I don't want to hear about your problems in a meeting unless I'm also hearing about your solutions. Right? What we share in a meeting is experience, strength, and hope. And here's what that looks like. This is what's been going on in my life. And I talked to my sponsor. And this is what he suggested, and I did that, and this is how it turned out. That's experience, strength, and hope. What we don't share in a meeting is, this is what's been going on in my life, and I don't know what to do, and I'm screwed. That's experience. And I think it's better if you and I talk about that rather than you take that to the meeting. Because it's not going to give any hope to the newcomer. Because here's the thing, is that the purpose of those meetings is to give the newcomer somewhere to find us. Everything else, after the newcomer has found CODA, everything else that happens, we can do outside the meeting. Everything that's important can happen in a coffee shop or across a kitchen table or over the phone with one helping another. And so we try to keep the meetings focused on experience and strength and hope. That's why our group is called Experience, Strength, and Hope Group. I tell my sponsees that part of my job is to help them, apply the tools of the program to their problems in their life. And so, when they have a problem, I need them to call me. And even if they're going to share the solution in a meeting, I don't want to hear about their problem there for the first time. Because if I'm hearing about their problem for the first time in a meeting, it means that they didn't call me and they're not giving me a chance to do my job. Apart from that, part of my job is to love the guy that I sponsor, to love him sufficiently that I'm more concerned about his long-term well-being than his transitory feelings. Therefore, sponsorship is an unreserved license. To be honest, I tell the guys that I sponsor what I see, even if they don't want to hear it. That's part of my responsibility to them.
I'll jump in, Richard. Go ahead. Certainly one of the things I would like to ask a new sponsee is, okay, where are you at in your recovery? And that's really an open invitation to say, you know, well, maybe I'm in this other 12-step program and I've been working it for 15 years. I need that context. I also let them know that I cannot sponsor them with, you know, with regards to that other program. I can sponsor them with regards to CODA, and that my sponsorship will be focused on that. I find it really important to ask them where they're at in their relationship with a higher power. Because for me, that's really important. If I've got a sponsee who has no interest in a relationship with a higher power, I need to let them know that, well, as far as I'm concerned, the way I sponsor is based on a relationship with a higher power and developing that relationship further. And if that's not something that you're interested in, then there may be other people who might be more suited to you for your recovery, because I'm going to bring everything from a point of view of my relationship with my higher power. That's certainly one of the things I bring up early in recovery, or early in our meetings. Because not everybody wants to hear that from me, I've found. Even though I think it's really important, not everybody does. Sorry, just want to get those two in there, Richard.
Yeah, and further to that, if they're in another 12-step fellowship that I'm not a member of, I want them to have a sponsor in that other 12-step fellowship.
Yeah.
And kind of related to that, if they are on medication for a mental health condition, I am not a doctor, right? I want you to continue to take that medication unless and until you have the discussion with your doctor. I mean, it's not none of my business if you decide to go off that medication, but I want you to have that discussion with your doctor, not with me. And one other thing is that I said before that part of my job is to love the guys that I sponsor, and I do. And I tell them that all the time, and I take delight in telling them that I don't really care if that bothers them. And what invariably happens is that I start telling a guy that at the end of every call, hey, love you. Yeah, okay. And then a couple months later, I'm getting, I love you too, Richard. And that feels pretty good.
Richard, I'm just really aware that we've got like a half an hour left. This time is going very quickly, I've got the time wrong.
Nope, but I think we're coming into the fast part here.
Okay.
So it's appropriate to have that chat, I think, in order to set your respective expectations with that relationship.
Surprise, I never say that I sponsor. I have never done that.
Okay. So you have that chat, have committed to being this person's sponsor. What's next? Well, the natural starting place is our program of recovery, 12 steps. We want to talk a little bit about getting somebody through those first three steps. Now, we have a couple of tools available for those first three steps. There's a document that is now conference endorsed that originally started in Northern California called the 30 questions. That's all about those first three steps. And it's kind of a mini workbook dedicated to just that. CODA Australia has a document focused on step one called the first 14 days. So there's a few of these kinds of tools around. My personal, and this is just my opinion, your mileage may vary, but my personal opinion is the best thing that I have to offer is my experience, strength, and hope. If they're coming to me because of the recovery they see in me, then the best thing that I can offer them is what I did, which wasn't the 30 questions or the first 14 days. So if somebody wants to do those, they're welcome to, but they don't count for what I'm going to ask them to do to get through the steps so that I'm satisfied that we've made the progress we need to make. Ultimately, though, I'm a believer in working the steps the way that they're written, and we can boil those first three steps down to three simple things. For the first step is a gut level realization that I've got a problem so large that it's beyond my capacity to solve. Whatever that looks like in that guy's life. The second step is the belief, or at least the suspicion, that there's a power greater than mine that can solve my problem. And the third step is simply a decision to give that a try.
I don't mean to be taking you away.
So if I can get that guy past those three pieces, then we're into the fourth step inventory, and he becomes a lot lower maintenance for a while because he's doing a lot of writing instead of talking to me. Ian?
I'm just laughing because I've got a sponsee right now who's can't believe how much work there is to do on the fourth step. And it's just funny. He's been through a couple of other programs and it's like, oh no, we're working the fourth step. This is what I want you to do on this part of the inventory. And it's been a really, really good process. But I agree with you. I prefer to take people through the first three steps the way I was taken through the first three steps, about sharing my experience, strength, and hope. The first time I sponsored, I went looking for other tools to use. But again, I found once I had some confidence that really sharing the first three steps from my point of view, from my experience, from my reflection, from what helped me, what didn't help me, that was really important. And it was easier for me to do that than to count on somebody else's workbook, right? Because frankly, I could answer the questions they asked me about my experience, but I couldn't always answer easily the questions they asked me about the workbook. That's how I tend to approach it.
And as you and I were talking about the other night, I mean, we'll personalize that approach in a lot of ways to the sponsee in question, depending on what seems to work for them, what registers with them. Yeah. With a lot of guys, the first step work that I have them do is entirely focused on those patterns of codependence and how they've been a repeated problem throughout their lives. But with other guys, it's more of a snapshot, that idea of how happy were you with your life when you were 9 years old on a scale of 1 to 10? Oh, you were a 9. Okay. How about at 16? Oh, you were an 8. How about at 25? Oh, you were down to a 6. How about at 35? Oh, you were down to a 3. Okay. How do you like that trend line? That sounds to me like the description of an unmanageable life. And for some guys, that's the thing that turns the light bulb on. And it's really just, that's what all we're doing is we're looking at in our own experience for what is it that we can use to help that guy turn the light bulb on. So we also talked about having boundaries as sponsors, and the idea that this is where I learned boundaries.
Yeah.
Because when I was first a sponsor, I would put my life and my family on hold because that sponsee called me and they need me, don't you know? But you know, I think a lot of us as codependents were people of extremes, and that was the extreme that I swung to. And recovery is about finding the middle. And so, now, the lady that I share my life with understands that this is an important part of my life. It's an important part of equipping me to be the kind of husband that she wants to have. And so she supports the time and effort that I put into this. But at the same time, I don't put all of my life into being a sponsor. The recovery process is meant to equip us to re-enter the mainstream of life. So if this is all the life I have, I'm missing something. And so I do set boundaries with sponsees about when I'm available. I'm not a morning person. If you want wisdom from me, don't call me in the morning. Because I sponsor a lot of guys in weird ass time zones, and our clocks, our schedules just don't match up. Best thing to do is, rather than just calling me at random through the day, is text and find out if I'm available. If I'm not, text back when I will be. Those are the kinds of boundaries that we need to set. But we get beyond that into things like inappropriate requests of a sponsor. And where it's necessary just to be able to say no to somebody. So what are some of the things that they can request of us that might be inappropriate that we need to set a boundary with? One that Ian and I talked about the other day was lying. Right? No, I won't tell you, tell your probation officer that you were with me. Ian?
Well, the other one that comes to my mind then is financial requests. No, sorry, that won't work for me. I also find that there are some people who get to a point where in their recovery where they're so afraid to make a decision that they want to keep talking to a sponsor to get permission for anything they do. And to me, that's a dangerous sign too. And I want to make some boundaries with that person because I don't want to be involved in every decision they make in their life. I don't want anybody that dependent on me. That sounds way too much like an enmeshment. So I have to keep an eye out for that kind of thing and set boundaries around it too. I'll echo what Richard said before about you offer love, unconditional love, as best you can to every sponsee who wants a relationship with you. But you don't necessarily have to like every sponsee, and you don't have to be every sponsee's best friend, right? So it's okay to draw boundaries around that. Yeah, I know we have a sponsor-sponsee relationship, but I'm sorry, but I don't want to go to movies with you. I have lots of other things in my life that I'm doing that I need to take care of, and I need time to take care of them. So, I'd prefer if we kept the relationship to, this 1 hour a night that we're speaking every week. And if you need me more than that, sure, just let me know. But, I need to be doing self-care too, and I need to be looking after my relationships too. So that's why I need to set a boundary here and limit the amount of time we spend together. Because I don't need to be everybody's best friend.
At the end of the day, every boundary that we ever set is actually with ourselves. We're defining what we will or won't allow into our lives. It's just useful sometimes to communicate those boundaries to some other person who's involved. And so one of the boundaries that I set is that Friday night is date night. I don't do sponsorship stuff on a Friday night until my wife is done for the night, because that night's hers as long as she wants it. Other inappropriate areas might be, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a lawyer, so medical or legal advice is off the table. Interceding in another relationship on their behalf, right? I was taught early on that if a sponsee calls me and wants me to talk to their wife to explain, no, that's just a sucker bet. I need to focus on sponsoring this guy, not trying to be some kind of a marriage counselor. And besides that, I find that if I can avoid doing that, their wives tend to be more supportive of this sponsorship relationship, because a lot of times a guy will come and talk to me, and I'll help him to see where he really wasn't behaving the way he'd like to, and he goes back and makes amends. And the partner gets accustomed to, he goes away and talks to the sponsor and he comes back much more reasonable. So, I know my wife adores my sponsor on that basis.
I have had some sponsees. I can think of one in particular who, at the end of trying to get to know them a little better and trying to start working the steps, and he seemed to not be making progress. I asked him about it. Like, we're not spending any time working on your steps. Like, are you not interested in your recovery? And he said, well, to be honest, I'm more lonely than anything. So really, I've got you because I need somebody to talk to. And it's like, yeah, I think you've come to the wrong person. This isn't going to work for me, because I'm here to help you work the steps, for me to teach you my experience, strength, and hope in recovery. And if that's not what you're interested in, then I think I'm going to need to end this relationship, because that's why I'm here. You know,
if we're not working on your recovery, we're not furthering mine.
I have a limited amount of time to sponsor people, and sponsorship is important to me. So I'm not here to pick up new friends. I'm here to exercise that spiritual muscle that I have, that's really important for me to keep healthy.
So how do we measure success in sponsorship? How can we tell when we're moving in the right direction and we're getting something accomplished? Well, for starters, I mean, it shows up in the sponsee. It might be something like, well, just something as simple as the steps are numbered. We went from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 to 5. We're making progress. But it shows up in other ways, I think. They stop calling as often because they're not in crisis as often. Or they are more relaxed when we do talk to them. That they're calmer. They're different. I'm talking to a different guy than the guy whose calls I was taking a year ago.
They're sharing at meetings is very different. It changes from a place of desperation to a place of where they're starting to share their own experience, strength, and hope.
Yeah. They're no longer focused on their own pain, and they're trying to help someone else. Yeah. And so they start sponsoring. That's a big one. A huge feeling of satisfaction and love when you watch somebody that you know came in bleeding and their hair's on fire, and you walk them through this process. You saw the light come on in their eyes, and then they start sponsoring somebody. That's a powerful, powerful feeling. Another big one, and it's one that I get to do on a regular basis, is to talk to the guy about the promises that I see happening in their life. A lot of times, we don't see those promises in our own lives until someone else points them out to us. And then we go, holy crap, you're right. Well, I get to be the guy who offers that guy that holy crap moment.
I love it when a sponsee phones me up and he said, I got into this really terrible situation, and I think I did the right thing. You know.
Yep. That when they phone to report a success.
Yeah.
Because they're so excited because it's the first one. That's always great. Those are the kinds of experiences that in my mind make sponsorship so exciting. But every once in a while it becomes necessary to move on. And can we break up with or fire a sponsee? How would we do that? I can report to you that I have never fired a sponsee. My sponsor discourages that idea, but I have had a discussion with a guy or a couple of different guys over the years. One that comes to mind was, we need to talk. I've noticed this pattern. And that is that you phone me with a crisis. And it's usually about something that she said or something that she did. And we talk about it. And I make some suggestions. And you say, yes, those are very good suggestions. And you go off to implement those suggestions. And then you have a better idea. And you do your own thing. And then I don't hear from you for a couple of months. And then you call me up in a crisis about something that she said or something that she did. And it's a different her. I make some suggestions. And you say those are very good suggestions. And you decide, you go off to implement those suggestions. And then you do something else. And we've done that a few times now. And I have to ask the question, do you honestly think I'm helping you? And would it be better if we looked around the landscape and found somebody whose style was more helpful to you? So, you know, I've never fired a sponsee, but I have on a couple of occasions offered to find them someone more helpful. Ian?
I shared the one experience where I fired a sponsee who basically really wasn't interested in working a program of recovery. He just wanted a relationship because he was lonely. He actually lived in another part of the world and felt very disconnected. And all I could say to him was, well, I'm here to help people in recovery that want to work on their recovery. And I'm sorry, I don't have enough time to essentially be a friend for somebody who's lonely on the other side of the world. I think you're going to have to do something else to meet that need of yours. But if you want to talk about recovery, I'm in. And it just fizzled out from there. He basically called me back once or twice, and then he never called again.
So it is possible. My experience has been, though, for the most part, the sponsee that I'd like to fire, I don't actually have to. They're usually 15 minutes away from ghosting me anyway. So,
15 minutes. We've got 15 minutes left in this session. So, if you have any wrapping up and then questions that happen kind of thing.
Well, maybe what we'll do is we'll save the big wrap up thing, that takes all of 2 minutes for the very end after the questions.
Yeah.
If we can. I don't think we're going to have time to get into the game show today.
No, so, we have something we've done before called Who Wants to Be a Sponsor, where we ask somebody to volunteer to be a sponsor, and then we read a question that we've had from a sponsee, and people get to practice. But we need a fair bit of time for that, so I don't think we're going to be able to do that today. I think we should try and get to some questions.
Yeah. So why don't we go to questions now? Deneer, your hand is up.
Hello, Deneré. Thank you all so much for this workshop. I really appreciate it. For anonymity, I'm curious to what, because I feel like, I don't know, for me, I felt a little bit weird having like personal, like hearing like personal stories about sponsees. You know, I know that it's, I just feel like I couldn't do that. Like I wouldn't do that. But so what does anonymity mean to you all as sponsors? I'm a little curious about that.
So for me, I am careful that when I share something about a sponsee in this kind of a context, I'm trying to do it in such a way that nobody could ever identify who that individual was, right? So for me, I am maintaining their anonymity by keeping what I'm sharing fairly generic. Keep in mind, I've been in program for 19 years, and I don't know how many sponsors I've gone through, but I doubt anybody, even that sponsee listening to this discussion, would recognize themselves when I'm sharing. Richard?
So, I think you said it all.
Thank you. I hope
that answered your question. Are there other questions? I can't believe there aren't other questions. Richard, what's been the most rewarding experience you've had with a sponsee?
One of the best recently is one that you know about, and that is a guy who got introduced, and this guy I have is okay to talk about, got introduced to a daughter he didn't know he had. He'd been working solid on his recovery for a little over 10 years, and was equipped when she came into his life to be the father she never had. And watching the relationship blossom between the two of them, as I get close to tears every time I just contemplate it. That's been powerful. And the number of times that he has phoned me or texted me to thank me for the help that he thinks I've given him to get that far. It's just really powerful.
I see Anthony's hand up, and then NP asked a question in chat, so I'll read that once Anthony's done, and then Tricia will be up.
Anthony Codependent, wasn't sure if I should just... So I guess thanks for the this meeting session. Just a lot of gems today. Also, so my biggest struggle as far as finding a sponsor has been, a lot of times I'm the only guy in the meeting I go to. And so there's that issue that always comes up. And then nobody's local. So everybody I find to talk to is, you know, long distance. So what's a good suggestion for that situation? I mean, without going into a long, you know, dissertation on my end.
Well, we talked a little bit about that in the last session, but realistically, you know, March 2020, every sponsorship relationship on the planet became a long-distance relationship. And you can go to a CODA meeting anywhere in the world. You can have a sponsor anywhere in the world that you want. My suggestion to a lot of people these days is look north, look south. Try to stay in a similar time zone if you want to connect with people. But even that's not necessarily the case. I sponsor a guy in Hawaii. I sponsor a guy in England, a couple of people in England. As long as you can get a little inventive about the scheduling, it works out well.
But I'd go back to something I said earlier about encouraging your local meeting to start. And if there aren't any other guys there, it's hard, but to start having meetings and talking about sponsorship. And seeing what workshops you can get to have happen about sponsorship. If you get a couple of good sponsors in a meeting, it makes a huge difference because they start sponsoring people. And then when their sponsees are ready to sponsor, you've got another layer of well-equipped sponsors. And it kind of grows from there. But I know a lot of CODA meetings struggle to get those first two people who are able to kind of get that growing in the group.
The other thing that I would mention, because Anthony mentioned being one of the only two guys in the meeting, and that's been our experience in the far past, is what happens is if you stick it out, you make the meeting safe for that next guy. And now that there's two of you, that makes it safe for the next guy, and the next guy, and the next guy. And I'll tell you what happened for us with the Experience, Strength, and Hope group is that it started with me and six of the scariest looking women I'd ever seen in my life. And, 10 years later, we were having three meetings a week, usually 30 plus people at a meeting, and half of them were men. But it takes the patience and the persistence to stick it out.
It looks like NP's question was answered by someone else in the chat. So let's go to Tricia. We've got 5 minutes before we have actual closing remarks and prayers.
Okay. I'm Tricia, codependent. So my question is, do you have a number, a specific number of people that you sponsor at one time? I can just tell you from my experience that I'm a retired nurse and codependent. I had been in another program for 13 years. My husband's in that program, and he said I was never allowed to sponsor in that program, and I can see why, because I am a codependent, and he knew that it would just take over my life at that time. But anyway, I do sponsor. I do not tell anyone that I sponsor because I want the people that ask me to feel that they relate to me and in my experience, strength, and hope. But my sponsor did call me out at one point because I never asked how many, and I was sponsoring too many people, and it was because I was getting into my trauma response of super nurse. So I just wanted to ask that question. Thank you.
But Richard sponsors more people than I do. So I'll kind of let Richard answer this from his point of view. But from my point of view, it depends where they're at in their recovery. If they're new in recovery and they need a lot of support, I usually can only handle one of those. And then I have several other people that are way past that stage, and they don't call me as often. So, I mean, I can sponsor 4 or 5 people sometimes, but I usually only have one person who needs a lot of attention at a time. Richard?
Before I get into that, I'm just going to preface by saying we're going to have to cut off the questions after Colton. So, because we've got one thing that we want to share with you that we think is really important. It's going to take a couple minutes. So, Tricia, my sponsor sponsors a legion of guys. And I love his answer to that question when he gets asked, how many people do you sponsor? And he replies, one at a time, the one in front of me. You know, my take on that is that I took the third step. I made a decision to try one day at a time to do the things that I think a loving higher power would have me do. I think that my higher power puts people in front of me when he wants them there. And so I really try very hard never to say no to a reasonable sponsorship request. My experience with that has been that, as Ian said, as guys get further through the steps, they become lower maintenance. So at any given time, I've got 2 or 3 that might be considered high maintenance. And I've got, maybe 3 or 4 that are in the pipeline. And then I've got, a bunch of guys that are really low maintenance I only hear from them every once in a while, and that works out well for me. But your mileage may vary. It's up to you.
Thank you.
Are we right out of time?
The 5 minutes. We have literally 5 minutes to finish and start the next thing. There's no gaps.
I think what we'll do is ask Colton if he wants to send one of us a message. We'll try to answer that way. Ian has something to read, and usually I would read this, but I've never once in my life got through reading this without crying. So we're going to see if Ian can get through reading it without me crying. Okay. And what this does is it speaks to our experience of sponsorship and why it's so important. It was written by Sam Shoemaker, who was the rector of Calvary Church. He's the guy who sponsored Bill Wilson in the Oxford groups back in ancient history. Go ahead, Ian.
It's called I Stand at the Door. I stand by the door. I neither go too far in nor stay too far out. The door is the most important door in the world. It is the door through which men walk when they find God. There's no use my going way inside and staying there when so many are still outside and they, as much as I, crave to know where the door is. And all that so many ever find is only the wall where the door ought to be. They creep along the wall like blind men with outstretched groping hands, feeling for a door, knowing there must be a door, yet they never find it. So I stand by the door. The most tremendous thing in the world is for men to find that door, to find the door to God. The most important thing that any man can do is to take hold of one of those blind, groping hands and to put it on the latch that only clicks and opens when the man's own with the man's own touch. Men die outside the door, as starving beggars die, on cold nights in cruel cities in the dead of winter, die for want of what is within their grasp. They live on the other side of it because they have not found it. Nothing else matters compared to helping them find it. And I open it and walk in and find him. So I stand by the door. Go in, great saints, go all the way in. Go way down into the cavernous cellars and way up into the spacious attics. It is a vast, roomy house, this house where God is. Go into the deepest of hidden casements of withdrawal, of silence, of sainthood. Some must inhabit those inner rooms and know the depths and heights of God and call outside to the rest of us how wonderful it is. Sometimes I take a deeper look in. Sometimes I venture in a little farther, but my place seems closer to the opening. So I stand by the door. There is another reason I stand there. Some people get partway in and become afraid lest God and the zeal of his house devour them. For God is so very great and asks all of us. And these people feel a cosmic claustrophobia and want to get out. Let me out, they cry. And the people way inside only terrify them more. Somebody must be by the door to tell them that they are spoiled for the old life, that they have seen too much. One taste of God and nothing but God will do anymore. Somebody must be watching for the frightened who seek to sneak out just where they came in, to tell them how much better it is inside. The people too far in do not see how near these are to leaving, preoccupied with the wonder of it all. Somebody must watch for those who have entered the door but would like to run away. So for them too, I stand by the door. I admire the people who go in all the way, but I wish they could not forget how it was before they got in. Then they would be able to help the people who have not yet even found the door, or the people who want to run away again from God. You can go in too deeply and stay in too long and forget the people outside the door. As for me, I shall take my old accustomed place, near enough to God to hear him and know where he is there, but not so far from men as to not hear them. And remember, they are there too. Where? Outside the door. Thousands of them. Millions of them. But more important for me, one of them, two of them, 10 of them, whose hands I intend to put on the latch. So I shall stand by the door and wait for those who seek it. I had rather be a doorkeeper. So I stand by the door. Thank you.
Thank you. Will someone please read the promises which are on the screen?
My name is James. I can read them. Am I being heard?
Yes, James, we can hear you.
I can expect a miraculous change in my life by working the program of Codependence Anonymous as I make an honest effort to work the 12 steps and follow the 12 traditions. 1, I know a new sense of belonging. The feeling of emptiness and loneliness will disappear. 2, I am no longer controlled by my fears. I overcome my fears and act with courage, integrity, and dignity. 3, I know a new freedom. 4, I release myself from worry, guilt, and regret about my past and present. I am aware enough not to repeat it. 5, I know a new love and acceptance of myself and others. I feel genuinely lovable, loving, and loved. 6. I learn to see myself as equal to others. My new and renewed relationships are all with equal partners. Seven, I am capable of developing and maintaining healthy and loving relationships. The need to control and manipulate others will disappear as I learn to trust those who are trustworthy. 8, I learn that it is possible for me to mend, to become more loving, intimate, and supportive. I have the choice of communicating with my family in a way which is safe for me and respectful of them. 9, I acknowledge that I am a unique and precious creation. 10, I no longer need to rely solely on others to provide my sense of worth. 11, I trust the guidance I receive from my higher power and come to believe in my own capabilities. 12, I gradually experience serenity, strength, and spiritual growth in my daily life. Thank you for letting me read.
Thank you. We'll wrap up with the closing prayer and the serenity prayer. For the closing prayer, we thank our higher power for all that we have received.